welcome to IRS proposed regulations dealing with the covered opinion rules. I'm Bob Keebler, and joining us today is attorney Michael Goller from Reinhart Border in Milwaukee. Welcome, Michael.
Good morning.
Michael, tell me a little bit more about what happened today, and you know, how do these new covered opinion rules, a change in Circular 230, how does this affect the day-to-day tax practitioner?
Certainly, Bob. By way of background, Circular 230, of course, governs practice by practitioners before the IRS. And the IRS has tinkered with these rules quite a bit since the early 2000s, trying to raise the bar for good tax practice. In other words, encourage good behavior. And we all recall back in 2005 when the covered opinion rules, which are in Section 10.35 of Circular 230, became final. These are the rules that affect written tax advice, six types of opinions, which are written tax advice, and they've required us to jump through a lot of hoops when we issue these opinions. And also, there's a reason, Bob, for the goofy disclaimers that's at the bottom of all of our emails. What's happened is the IRS has wisely looked at these rules, these covered opinion rules, and said they haven't worked. The quality of tax practice has increased. They concede that. But the fact of the matter is the covered opinion rules are complicated. They add levels of work that needn't be added. And the fact of the matter is practitioners legend out of these covered opinion rules as often as they can. So the end result is you put a legend on almost everything you do saying this is not a covered opinion, and taxpayers don't read them, clients don't really read them. So it may in some respects be more harmful than just writing a good solid tax opinion. So that's the stage that was set, Bob, prior to last Friday when these proposed regs came out.
Now, I know they go way beyond just the ability to take away the disclaimer. There's going to be some real significant impact on tax opinions. Can you walk us through that, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. Prior to these rules, these new rules, which there's going to be hearing on in December, but I expect they will be finalized quickly, if you issued a covered opinion, one of the six types of covered opinions, you had to recite all the relevant facts, you had to recite all your assumptions, and there was really sort of a template that you had to follow to issue that written tax advice. And it was burdensome and it was problematic. And in a lot of cases, you could legend out of the covered opinion rules, but not always. What the IRS has done now is they've said, let's delete the existing Section 10.35 and focus on Section 10.37, which covered written tax advice that didn't rise to the level of a covered opinion. And they focus on that section saying, we want you to still write good tax opinions. You still have a duty to consider the reasonableness of facts, to consider what assumptions you're making, but we're not going to make you dot your I's and cross your T's in every opinion. It may be, Bob, that you want to do some of that stuff. You want to articulate in the writing what your assumptions are and what the facts are, because that may make a better tax opinion, but you're not going to be required going forward to follow this very rigid template of what goes in the opinion, which I think is a change for the good.
Michael, what do the proposed regulations say about a practitioner's reliance on other practitioners?
That's very helpful as well, Bob. They engrafted into Section 10.37 provisions that say I can rely on other practitioners so long as my reliance is in good faith and it's reasonable. And they'll apply a reasonable test. So I certainly can rely on others. But again, the lesson that I want to follow is, if I'm relying on somebody else, if I'm relying on advice you're giving me, Bob, I want to probably document in my file why I'm relying on that, why the advice you're giving me is reasonable and I'm relying on it in good faith. But again, that's another change, I would think, for the better. It's very clear that when issuing written tax advice, I can rely on the opinion of others.
And Michael, are there other provisions in the proposed regulations that should give practitioners pause?
There are. There's two I wanted to mention. One is the new Section 10.35, so they deleted 10.35, the covered opinion rules, but they included a provision in the new Section 10.35, which has a general competency standard that says you have to be competent to practice before the IRS. And the IRS will look at your knowledge, skill, thoroughness, and the preparation necessary to handle a matter. So there's another provision that says you simply have to be competent to act before the IRS. And, of course, there's others in Circular 230 as well. Section 10.22 has a diligency requirement. So there's still a lot of provisions in here which require us to raise the bar for tax practice. The other provision that I think is very of great interest is the new changes to Section 10.36, which says that if you have management authority, you have authority to supervise your firm's tax practice, then you have to do two things. One is you have to make sure that there are procedures in place to make sure your people comply with Circular 230. And number two, if there is a violation of Circular 230, you have to have procedures in place to address that issue, to fix the problem. So we, as in management, are being held to a higher standard, which, again, I think the theory is this will raise the bar for all tax practice because we want to make sure that our subordinates comply with the rules.
Well, Michael, on behalf of Limerick Information Services, we want to thank you for joining us today. These are important rules, and we're going to invite you back when these regulations are finalized.
It's a pleasure, Bob. Thank you.